pitch the ball to Bell. That's upfield. 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. He's in the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Cowboys. What a run.
Kicks it left wing, Lucas. Three-point jumper. Good. 6 seconds. Rebound! Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Pistols firing! Touchdown, Oklahoma State!
Okay, welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for joining us today. As always, you can check out our podcast and the rest of our material on pistolsfiringblog.com, or you can check us out on iTunes. Today we have Jay Fielder of rivals.com joining us to talk a little bit about National Signing Day, which is right around the corner, happening tomorrow. So hope you guys enjoy our talk about recruits, where Oklahoma State's at, where they're trying to get to, and everything that entails. Okay, Jay Fielder, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate you coming on today to talk about some Oklahoma State recruiting.
Thank you, Kyle, for having me. Appreciate it. It's good to be on here.
Yeah.
I've known Matt for a while. He's been trying to get me on here, so I'm excited to be part of it. So appreciate the offer.
Well, hopefully you're better than he is. That probably won't be that difficult to do. But
he's pretty good. He's not too bad.
I do want to talk about this class that Oklahoma State has come in. Obviously, nothing's finalized until Wednesday, February 1st. Mm-hmm. So far, though, how does it rank against maybe in the last – well, I guess in Gundy's tenure, where do you see it falling in terms of where it's ranked?
You know, it's interesting because you always have to – obviously, I work for Rivals, and so we have the way that we rank these guys, and then Scout does their thing. I mean, there's so many websites now that do it. You know, and they all have their stars that get associated with them. And so when those websites rank the classes, they all have their own, you know, quote unquote secret formulas that they use to do so. But to me, there's a little more that goes into it, just in terms of, you know, at least in my opinion, you have to place a lot of stock in, are you filling the needs that you have? Does that make sense? I mean, it's kind of one of those, I mean, yeah, you could sign 10 five-star guys, but if they're all running backs, it doesn't really do you a whole lot of good. So in terms of the needs, I think it ranks right up there. I mean, the ranking overall, like take Rivals, for example, you know, the ranking overall compared to previous years isn't quite as high. Like right now, Oklahoma State is listed, and today's Monday. And so right now, Oklahoma State is listed as 32nd, which is honestly right about where they've hovered the last 4 or 5 years. I read an article, I'm not even going to be able to give credit for it, but I read an article earlier today that discussed, you know, where this year's top 10 or 15 teams finished compared to how their recruiting has been over the past 4 or 5 years. You know, the top 10 teams, Oklahoma State really was, had probably one of the top 2 or 3 lowest averages of recruiting rankings finishes. So, one, that goes to show you that the OSU coaches know how to evaluate talent, and two, it shows that the OSU coaches know how to develop it. But the question you asked before I got off on that tangent was where it ranks in terms of Gundy's classes. I would probably, I mean, the class that stands out to everybody is the one that brought in Dez Bryant. You know, they had Dez, they had a number of other guys.
Was that Kendall Hunter? Was he in that class?
I think so. I'm trying to pull it up real quick. I think it had Dez, it had Kendall. I think it had William Cole, who obviously didn't pan out.
Yeah.
And I think they had Rochetti. It was all those guys that would have been fifth year seniors this year.
Okay.
And so that's the class that at this point everybody kind of compares to, and I guess part of that is just because of the results. You know, obviously Dez turned out to be a heck of a player, regardless of the off-field issues. You know, but you end up, you know, you had Kendall Hunter, who was a two-time All-American. You know, and it's kind of, it's one of those deals where the rankings now, the way the classes are, it's all fun to test and discuss or whatever, but you really don't, it's hard to judge them, honestly, until you see the production on the field.
Yeah. Well, it seems like I saw that article you were referencing earlier. I think it was on Rivals, actually. And you had teams up there like Oregon and Boise State and Oklahoma State who traditionally don't have, I mean, I don't know, they don't really have top 20 or top 15 recruiting classes. But it seems to me that part of the reason for that for Oklahoma State is because Gundy really tries to go and get, at least offensively, guys that he can just kind of plug in to the Josh Cooper spot and to the you know, Tracy Moore spot, and guys that don't necessarily have, you know, aren't four stars or five stars, but just guys that he thinks will fit in there. And then they go on defense and try to get the four and five star guys. Is that kind of, I mean, do you see that as kind of their philosophy?
No question. And I was about to mention it was it, the teams that typically you'll see, like you just mentioned, Boise and Oregon, along with OSU. And the thing you'll notice about those three teams is it's always, they're almost kind of always thought of as having some sort of a system.
Right.
Does that make sense? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like Oregon's got the Oregon offense. OSU has the OSU offense. Boise State had Boise State's offense, but Boise State also had Kellen Moore. And so it's kind of, they're the one that I'm going to be most intrigued by as far as how they do with now that he's gone.
Right.
Because I think, you know, I don't know how good of a pro he'll be, but he was really, really good quarterback as far as what he was asked to do. The kind of, you know, and to a degree, you could almost say the same thing about Brandon Weeden. Obviously, Brandon's 28 and is, you know, based upon this last week, has worked himself up to where he might be able to sneak in the first round of the draft. So the comparison can be there, and it also isn't quite fair. But my point is, and this echoes what you just said, is, you know, there are certain positions, I guess, so to speak, you know, where, like you just said, you've got the Josh Cooper spot where you just kind of, you know, they've got David Glidden and now they've got Blake Webb. And so there's always that kind of niche role for where, you know, you may not need a five-star guy to come in there and fit that spot.
Yeah.
You know, you need a guy that can come in there and kind of be a little bit of a jitterbug in the slot. And, you know, the thing that made Josh Cooper so valuable was, one, you know, he wasn't the fastest guy you're ever going to see. And he was great in high school, but, he didn't outrun a whole lot of people. but he ran great routes, and he never dropped a pass.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what they need. You know, and so go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you what positions has Gundy or I guess anybody out there recruiting been chasing the hardest since the season ended?
Wide receiver was a spot that they really had the biggest need. OSU currently has five guys committed. Chance Allen. We're kind of wait and see on him. He visited Oregon this last weekend, so it's still kind of up in the air with him. I tried to get a hold of him, but have had no luck there. Juwan Fields is the guy that kind of came out of nowhere recently in the last 2 weeks. I know Coach Munkin and Coach Dunn both went down to kind of see him in person, to kind of measure him up a little bit. Obviously, like what they saw, and we're able to get a commitment out of him. Blake Webb is an inside receiver. Go ahead. What did you say?
Oh no! Is Juwan? Is he the guy from Port Arthur?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the guy. He was committed to Houston, and for the star junkies, it's not. He's listed as a 2-star, and that's going to bother some people. But I have it on pretty good authority that the only reason he isn't higher than that was because by the time he was discovered and committed and all that kind of stuff, because the final set of Rivals rankings was pretty much set, and they can't go back and change it.
Right.
And so it's one of those deals where, yeah, he's a two. Honestly, it's kind of one of those things that I think is going to end up happening with, I forgot his name. The guy that we picked up real late last year. The wide receiver.
Not Stewart.
No. Hold on. Can't believe I can't remember his name. Torrance Carr.
Okay. Yeah, he was a guy that Whedon, I guess, was talking about really impressed him in practice and stuff.
Exactly. The same kind of deal where, and I don't know that Shields was necessarily a late qualifier like Carr was, but it's one of those deals where, I mean, yeah, he's ranked as a two-star guy, but he was, you know, anybody that was asked that, you know, there's privy to watching practices. I said, if anybody compared it to Justin Blackman through his redshirt year, it was him. You know, and so it's kind of one of those, sometimes you just find the guy real late in the process and it's too late to get him ranked or evaluated.
Right.
But like I said, I've got on pretty good authority that has watched the senior film that says he's better than a two-star. So getting back to my point on the receivers was, to me, that was the biggest need. They got it filled. You know, was it with, I don't know, was it with their first choice guys? You know, you could argue one way or the other. I think they got guys that they wanted. I know Chance Allen is a guy that they evaluated at camp this past summer and actually offered him at that point. But I don't think ever really pressed for any sort of commitment, you know, for one reason or another. And then really the other biggest need, really just based upon lack of depth heading into next year, defensive end.
Yeah.
You know, you lose Rashetti and you lose Jamie Blatnick. And so you're only really losing, you're losing your two starters and you're only losing two guys. And then you've got the backups coming back in Cooper Bassett and Ryan Robinson. But beyond that, the only other guy that played defensive end consistently this past year was Jimmy Bean. And he was a true freshman. And so, you know, going into this next season, you've got Cooper and Ryan Robinson starting, I mean, presumably, and then Jimmy Bean probably backing one of those guys up. Well, the plan at this point, at least based on who they have committed, is to sign four freshman defensive ends. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those deals where playing time is going to be there. You know, how much you want to rely on a true freshman to come in and make an impact on the defensive line. You know, I guess you just kind of throw them in the fire and see what happens to a degree. But there's been a lot of discussion, and I think this could be ultimately what happens. There's been a lot of discussion of moving some of the lighter interior guys outside, like maybe a Nigel Nicholas or a David L. Collins next year.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see what happens. But from a pure need standpoint in terms of numbers, defensive end and wide receiver were by far the most crucial. You know, there's four offensive linemen on the board, but that's pretty typical every year. You know, Wickline almost ideally likes to sign a full class every year, just but nobody really ever questions what he does. He's just, if you see an offensive line, it's true. I mean, you know, if OSU gets an offensive lineman, they're like, yeah, great. What, you know, you just assume he's going to be a pretty good player, or if he's okay, then Wickline's going to make him a good player. It's kind of it's really kind of crazy how that's gotten to that point. I mean, nobody, you see somebody commit that is a low level three star, and everybody starts freaking out. Why are we taking this guy? Well, if he's an offensive lineman, nobody says a word. And so it's just kind of like, well, okay, yeah. And it's just observing that from the standpoint that I have, it's entertaining, I guess, is the best way to put it. So.
Well, going back to defensive end, I think that was a position this year that had such an impact on how well OSU played. And you know, people talk about the defense or whatever, but Blatnick and Rashetti both had great years. And I think that'll be a really interesting spot because you are pretty deep in terms of experience in the secondary and the linebackers and everything.
No question.
But, it, you know, those guys are worthless if you can't pressure the quarterback. So I think what they do – a defensive end will be really interesting. If you're looking, you know, and I know this is difficult and maybe people don't like to do this, but 4 years down the road, Who's going to be the guy from this class that you were like, man, I'm really glad we have him, that he's at Oklahoma State?
You talking more in terms of just the impact he has on the field?
Yeah, impact he has on the field. You know, I'm just glad that he's not, it didn't end up at OU or Texas or something like that.
Well, let's see. I'll see if I can't come up with one on either side of the ball. I think, let's see, over a four-year span, at this point, I think it's going to be hard to pick against West Lund.
Yeah.
Just because he is the absolute tailor-made prospect for the offense we ran this year.
Is he going to start next year?
I don't know. That is a tall task to ask. My answer would be definitively no if he was coming in the summer.
Right.
He'll have a chance. It's hard to say until we watch spring ball, honestly.
Yeah.
But you can't undervalue a year in the system that J.W. Walsh has had. And then, you know, in my opinion, and be as limited as it may, I honestly thought Clint Schelf didn't do too bad of a job this year. Is he a guy who's going to go out and win you 10 or 11 games? I don't know. That's what spring ball is for. It's really intriguing because this is the first time really since I've been doing this that there really has been very minimal, well, that's not really the right word, but there hasn't really been any sort of inclination toward the guy that might be able to take the job heading into the next season. Does that make sense?
Right, yeah.
When Bobby Reed was there, everybody kind of knew that he was eventually going to get it, and then when Zach kind of took over, he was the quarterback for a long time. And then, obviously, after the Colorado game, 2.5 years ago, everybody knew, well, first off, everybody knew that Alex Kate was not the answer, and then that Brandon Whedon was more than likely going to be the guy. So there's really been about a 5 or 6 year stretch here where the quarterback position had been pretty well established. There may be some competition for the backup, but the question as to who was the starter has essentially been answered. Well, heading into spring ball this year, I don't think anybody has a clue. I guess you could say Clint Schelf is the front runner just because he's got the most experience. But, even at that, it's not a whole lot.
It's weird because everything I see is like, oh, is it going to be Schelf? Is it going to be Lunt? And then you're like, wait, didn't we have a 4-star guy in Walsh
exactly.
come in last year? And
exactly.
Are people forgetting about it? I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Go ask Matt Brown how much he'd kill to have J.W. Walsh in his campus right now.
He'd like to have any of those guys right now, probably.
Well, that's my exact point, and he was their first choice, and he picked us, and so they went and got David Ash. And that's not to say David Ash wasn't bad this year, but I'm just telling you, having a guy that can operate your team just to not lose games for you is so important.
Yeah.
It's just going to be interesting. I don't know. It's definitely one of the things I'm most excited about watching unfold during spring ball. On defense, let me see here. It's hard to say with defensive linemen just because you never know. I think Jeremiah Shimonga's got a chance to be a pretty good player. Honestly, the guy I think has a chance to be really, really good just because he reminds me of Justin Gilbert a little bit is Kevin Peterson.
Yeah.
And just watching his film, Peterson played offense. He didn't play much quarterback. But he's just one of those guys that's about 5, I think Gilbert's maybe a little bit taller, but, Peterson's 5'10", 180, but he's lightning quick. Just the similarities are there to where – Well, and just having talked to him, he's a great kid, extremely level-headed. I thought he handled the switch from OU to OSU very, very well, as best as you could handle it, switching in-state schools.
Right.
you know, and he just sounds like a guy that really likes football and is eager to get better. And just is he's one of the guys that I would be very surprised if he doesn't find his way on the field next year in some capacity, whether it be returning punts or kicks, or even as, you know, even cracking the two or three deep on a cornerback.
Yeah.
So if I had to pick a guy, I think he would be the one that I would go with right now. And so I don't know if that would surprise anybody or not, but it was a huge, huge quote unquote win for OSU, in my opinion, to get him from OU. Because as we all are aware, OU typically churns out just guy after guy on defense. You know, and the fact that they wanted him, you know, honestly, you know, signifies to me that they thought he could play a little bit. And, you know, rarely does OSU, you know, rarely does it work where OSU is able to get a guy from OU. So,
yeah.
He's the guy at this point I would be most excited about.
Well, who just in kind of going through the process, and I know it's kind of a weird process. I think Twitter and just the ubiquity of sports media has made the recruiting process even weirder than it's ever been. But who, as you've gone through and evaluated and talked to people, has handled the entire process the most mature manner? I know that's kind of a, you know, you don't talk to everybody and you don't know everybody, but who kind of stood out? You're like, man, that guy's pretty mature for a senior in high school coming into college.
Without question, the guy that jumps off the page at me is Trace Clark. Simply because the reason I appreciate how he handled it is because he never, and I like it. I like the guys that do it this way because I'm trying to think of the best how to describe it. He never got to where he narrowed it down publicly to like less than five schools.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Right.
And so there are always a number of schools that still were involved, at least publicly. It just didn't dawn on me until I actually talked to him when he made his commitment, you know, because I asked him kind of how he came up with his decision. And he just kind of, you know, he had a very methodical process for how he evaluated schools and how he eliminated them. I mean, he had Oklahoma State, he had Iowa, he had Stanford, he had Oregon, and I think he had the two Kansas schools. You know, he's from Wichita, so I think they were in play there for a while. And I can't remember exactly what he said of why he eliminated the Kansas schools. But, you know, he just said Oregon was a little far away. You know, he liked the program. He really liked Stanford. But, you know, he told me just honestly when talking to the coaches on his visit there, he just didn't get the sense from them that they wanted him as much as some of these other schools, you know, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, and so ultimately it came down to Oklahoma State and Iowa, and the reason for that was because of their engineering programs. And so I always admire kids that are able to kind of, obviously football plays a big part of it, but, you know, that are able to grasp the notion that they are student athletes. You know, and the student part comes first. Well, it should, I guess I should say. And it rarely does. But he was one of the few guys that certainly seemed to portray that was one of the biggest factors in his decision.
Right.
And so when he got down to Iowa and OSU, it became the engineering programs, and they're pretty comparable. You know, and then I think he got to the football standpoint, which if you compare an Iowa versus Oklahoma State, you know, today, it seems rather obvious who the favorite would be just in terms of where the program is at.
Right.
You know, Iowa's got a great tradition. I've never been there. You know, and they've won a lot of football games. I mean, they were in the Orange Bowl not too long ago. You know, but if you're comparing the program with a snapshot, you know, on the 2011 season, which is a lot of what this is based on at this point, you know, it would seem logical that the Oklahoma State would be the choice, and it was. But just, you know, the way he handled it, I thought was great. You know, he didn't cut schools down, and he just, you know, he kept it at five and kept it at five and then just made a choice without sitting there and stringing everybody along and doing any sort of hat dance or T-shirt dance or, you know, whatever whenever new game somebody can come up with to announce a decision. So
why do you think OSU's success on the field this year, going 12-1, hasn't necessarily translated to, you know, maybe picking up some 4- and 5-star guys? Is that something that you see later on down the road, or is it something that just is never going to happen at OSU?
It's a great question, and there, yes and no is kind of the answer to it. Typically, what you'll see in recruiting is, like, for example, because the reason you have to think of it this way is because you have to think of when your relationships are first established.
Right.
You know, so this 2011 season, you know, you got 12-1, you got the Fiesta Bowl. Well, you don't really have, by the time the season's over, I mean, you got about 2 months to sort of kind of pitch that to these 2012 guys. You know, guys that have already kind of, you're either in or you're out on. I mean, I think you can definitely increase interest in your school. I've heard guys in the athletic department have said, you know, they've got kids calling their program expressing interest like crazy, and, you know, they have to turn a lot of them away. But there's no question that in recruiting, you typically won't see results of a season until the year after.
Okay.
And so what that means is, if the 4- and 5-star guys might express some interest in OSU, I think you'll start to see it in the 2013 class.
Okay.
Because right now is when those guys are starting to kind of, you know, they just finished their junior year, and that's when you start to get recruited.
Right.
You know,
right.
A lot of recruiting offers are dictated based upon how you did your junior year.
Right.
And so now is when the coaches are going around and trying to figure out who they want. And so now is when you can make that impression. Hey, you know, check out this Fiesta Bowl trophy we just happened to have right here. It's all that kind of stuff. So, that's typically how it works. So the 2012 season is largely centered around whatever recruiting efforts they had coming off of 2010, which was still a great year. But, you know, anybody in their right mind is going to have a hard time comparing a Alamo Bowl win over Arizona over a Fiesta Bowl win over the number 4 team in the country.
Right.
You know, and you beat the guy that just is probably about as guaranteed in the number 1 pick as you can get. So that's just kind of how it works. To answer the other part of your question, as far as the 4- and 5-star guys, I just don't ever see, unless OSU gets to a point where they actually win a national title, which sounds crazy, but it doesn't sound nearly as crazy today as it did about, I don't know, two years ago. You know what I mean? And so unless they actually win a title or actually play for it, it just takes a while to kind of develop that tradition, so to speak. I mean, yeah, it's a new thing right now, and there's a lot of interest. But, you know, I think that the opportunity will be there to get those guys' attention. But I just don't know that Oklahoma State will ever be able to just have these 4- and 5-star guys just lining up at the door like an Alabama does or somebody like that. I mean,
I think your 5-star guys, I think you're right, even though, I mean, just case in point, even though Texas has been terrible really the last 2 years, they're still, because they're Texas, they still get the 5-star guys. And I don't know if that's a tradition thing or I don't know what that is, but it's just, I think that takes not years, but maybe decades to overcome something like that.
No question. Yeah. Texas, for the most part, unless they kind of stay where they're at for the next, like you said, 5 or 6 years, they're going to pretty much be able to get whoever they want in state. You know, it's not a matter of if we get this guy. It's you know, they kind of more pick and choose. And you got to give Mac Brown some credit in the sense that, you know, he's gotten that program to where they can be very selective about who they recruit. You know, it's to the point now where getting even offered by Texas is such a huge deal to those kids, and they know that you know, it's kind of one of those where I better take it before it's gone type of thing, because Mac has that luxury of, well, if we have a kid that's committed and he takes a visit somewhere, well, we'll just pull his offer. You know, that's the threat.
Right.
And so Oklahoma State, in my opinion, will never be able to be in that spot.
Well, yeah. You saw that with Kendall Sanders. I mean, it was, you know, Texas is calling. I got to go there, you know? So.
Sure, exactly. And there, it's a pride thing. I mean, you know, a lot of people that I've met that were born in Texas, there's just some sort of pride thing going on about being from there. And so those kids are raised to where, of all options available, if you have a feasible, legitimate option of staying in state, then that is what they're going to try and sway you to. And so that, you know, honestly, and this is another random thing, but going back to looking at OU's class, that's what made it so impressive way back when they got Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
That's the prototypical example. I mean, they got Adrian Peterson and Brett Bomar out of that state, and they were the top two or three guys in that entire state. And they went to, you know, Texas' biggest rival.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do. And so, you know, Oklahoma State's lifeblood in recruiting is obviously the state of Texas, and I don't think that'll ever change. And it just kind of is what it is. I think honestly, where you'll see a little bit more of an impact on this from the 2012 season is maybe not in Texas. You know, and I tell you what, that's where you look at like the Jaden Mickens of the world and the Seth Jacobs and all these guys. You know, I mean, there's a few more guys from non-traditional OSU recruiting places that are starting to have a little bit of interest, and so I can see that maybe being where you might see a little more of an immediate impact just from a national brand standpoint, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Like I said, Texas will always be the main pipeline. And so that's the thing, is the 4 and 5 star guys are always going to get recruited by Texas and A&M. And so you're always going to have to battle those guys. You know, beating them on the field is the best way to combat that. And the right. fact that we, you know, OSU's beaten A&M 4 in a row and Texas 2 in a row is a heck of a start. And so you just got to hope that they can keep it going. And, you know, you just hope that you can start to take off one or two guys from those schools every year.
Right. Well, that's actually a great segue into my last question that I had for you, which is, I'm going to give you 3 guys, and I want you to tell me where you think, just gut reaction, they're going to end up signing on Wednesday.
Okay.
First one is Jaden Mickens.
I will be surprised if he doesn't sign with Oklahoma State.
I mean, that's a huge late, you know, last 3 weeks of recruiting pickup if they can snag him.
Yeah, it's just kind of, and I can't say why. But, you know, it's just kind of one of those, I've got a hunch that OSU is in a good spot. Things can change.
Right.
But, yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, it's kind of one of those, it's a perfect example of what I was talking about. They were down there, they being OSU coaches, you know, they were down in Arizona watching Wes Hunt and the Semper Fi All-American game. And they saw, you know, Mickens goes out there and just torches everybody. And so then it's kind of one of those, like, well, we'll check his interest, all this kind of stuff, throw an offer out there, see if it sticks. Well, lo and behold, the guy takes an interest in you, comes and takes an official visit and loves it. There's no doubt that he would be a perfect fit for, Oklahoma State's offense. I think he realizes that. Of the guys who I think you're going to ask me about, he would be the one I would have the greatest amount of confidence in signing with Oklahoma State on Wednesday.
Okay. What about Seth Elkins?
Seth Jacobs?
Or Seth, sorry, Seth Jacobs. Yeah.
No, you're right. He's interesting because I'll say this. I think OSU is in the best spot. but he's been really, really hard to read. He's another guy that has handled the process admirably, in my opinion, because he has not tipped his hand really one way or the other. And that's getting back to what I said about Trace Clark. That's kind of how he was.
Uh-huh.
You know, just in talking to him, I knew he really liked OSU. I'm thinking of Trace here, but I was never really quite sure. You know, it was more just kind of my gut on that. And it's kind of the same thing about Seth. It's just the thing that always lingers with guys in his spot is, you know, Oklahoma is not very close to California.
Right.
And so the location thing, as it gets down to crunch time, can sometimes come into play a little bit, but Seth has family in Tulsa, so that kind of counters that a little bit. You know, and if you're comparing schools that he has offers from just in terms of the current prestige of the program, then I think Oklahoma State wouldn't get a landslide. You know, because, well, I say that Arkansas is up there too, and they're in the mix. It's OSU, Arkansas, and then I guess Colorado and UCLA. But I don't know. It just, going with my gut on this, I think he signed with OSU as well.
And the last one, what about Trey Elston?
He's another one that about midway through this weekend, I felt really confident about. And then he hopped on the plane to LSU was there for a few hours. But it's hard to say. I mean, there's so much in play with him. I know, and this is crazy, but he's got a girlfriend, and he's from Oxford, Alabama. And I know he's got a girlfriend there that is I don't want to say influential, but he has a girlfriend. So it's kind of one of those, well, you don't know exactly how much influence it's going to have, but it could and it may not. You just don't really know. I do know that he really liked his visit to OSU. I haven't talked to him since then, but I've had sources that have told me, I don't like using that word very often, but, I've had people that would know tell me that OSU, at least as of Saturday night, was in a good spot.
Yeah.
A lot can change over these next 2 days. It's the dead period. But all that means is that there can be no on or off campus contact, but phone calls are allowed. So you never know what could happen between midnight last night and midnight Wednesday morning. So if I had to bet on it, I would say that maybe OSU even lands all three.
Wow, that would be.
It'd be a great finish.
Yeah, it really would, and you know, three guys that two of them are, obviously defense. Elson's defensive side of the ball. So two guys that are defensive side of the ball, and then one on offense. And I guess Mickens could play defense if necessary. But yeah, that'd be a huge finish for Gundy and where they're at and everything. And it'll definitely be one of the more exciting national signing days on Wednesday. So yeah, Jay, appreciate you coming on. We will look for your work on rivals.com. How are you? Are you guys going to be like live blogging Wednesday, or how's all that going to work on Wednesday?
Honestly, I'm not entirely sure. It's kind of a unique situation. Like, and you and I had kind of tweeted back and forth about this earlier. Is OSU is not usually in this spot,
right?
Where they've got two or three guys that they could get, but then they could very well not get. And so it's kind of one of those where there doesn't really appear to be a backup plan. You know, it's like you could get all three guys, but if you don't get all three guys, well, then you just are kind of out of luck.
Right.
But from, you know, the three guys that you mentioned that are up in the air all have decision times established. Jaden Mickens is actually tomorrow. I haven't confirmed. I'm going to try and confirm with him what actual time he's announcing. And then Trey Elston is on ESPNU on Wednesday. And then Seth Jacobs, I believe, he's supposed to do it Wednesday night, which is a strange time in terms of actual signing day. But I don't know that he has all the details sorted out as far as how he's actually going to do it. So the best, honestly, the best thing right now is to just kind of, pay attention to the website. Now, once Jeff or myself knows more, we'll definitely post it. And then we may do a live blog, and it may just be one of those deals where we just kind of do the live feed within a thread on the website. So kind of the same purpose, but that's our plan, at least at this point. So.
Yeah, and for the listeners, that's oklahomastate.rivals.com, and then you can check Jay out on Twitter at Fielder29. So that's his Twitter handle. And Jay, we appreciate you coming on, and we will talk to you later on.
Well, Kyle, appreciate it, buddy. Thank you very much for the time. I enjoyed it.
Okay, thanks, man.
Okay.
Okay, bye.